harping on the wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking down the way of life, I'm fighting and fought and died to be. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on AltRightTV.com or WhiteResistanceRadio.com. You can reach us through either avenue, and lots more news and views for our people, of course. Those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. I want to thank Dr. James Sanchez for sending this my way. I usually wait and play my music a little later near the end of the show, but this is called Song During Portland. And I think this is going to be kind of humorous. The Brain Dead Biddens new song is Burning Portland. From each according to his ability, to me according to my creed. Inspired by the idiot communists burning the fine city of Portland.
Thank you.
that's quite the song. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on AltRightTV.com and WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, you have to shake your head. Savage repression in the Australian state of Victoria, which has, since February or summer, fewer than, I think, 140 deaths from COVID in a population of 6.75 million, has now gone into an insane lockdown, an 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew. People are only allowed to send one person per family per day to go grocery shopping. You're only allowed out if you are going to a workplace that's deemed essential. Fines of up to $1,600 and some odd for breaking this. Police can bust into your residence without a warrant. It's insane. Well, there's been some pushback. And the story that I'm quoting, of course, has the misleading fake news headline, Coronavirus Australia Conspiracy Theorists Facing $10,000 Fines. Conspiracy, you're a conspiracy theorist if you don't want to be locked down in what is the most restrictive conditions since the Second World War, and I suspect even more restrictive than wartime conditions. And at least there was the excuse then that there was a war on and fears perhaps of a Japanese invasion of Australia. Anyway, the story goes this way. The Victoria Premier has warned coronavirus conspiracy theories disrupting police will face fines. Victorian police Premier Daniel Andrews has warned those filming themselves arguing with police at checkpoints will be taken to court. What? Where's the crime? Arguing with police? Oh, that's dissent. That is a crackdown on dissent, pure and simple. They have now been found. I do not believe they received an on-the-spot fine. That is the low-level fine, he said. I think they will be charged on summons. They will be that will be a matter for others, and I do not determine those matters. But there is on-the-spot $1,652 fine, and if you go through a court process, it's much closer to $10,000. So it's a pretty significant penalty. Yeah, it's police state. It's Stalinism. That's what it is. So you can be fined up to $1,652 on the spot for violating this Stalinist police state, these restrictions. But if they escalate and take you to court, where you actually might be able to say your give a defense, why give these people any more airtime? And there was some pretty creative protests. Eve Black was arrested after her viral attempt to cross a Melbourne checkpoint. Seriously, this is not about human rights. This is about human life. This is not about some obscure nonsense you've read on a website. There are rules, there are laws in place, and everyone should follow them. This is Stalinist premier of Victoria. And I'm not really interested in wasting any of our time or using these examples of appalling behavior to detract from the vast majority of Victorians who are doing the right thing, or in other words, are being terrified or beaten into line. Elizabeth Rose filmed herself without a mask in protest against store policy during a trip to Bunnings. They're the ones who we should be celebrating. The case I referred to very briefly a moment ago, the person who went through the checkpoint, police have found her and she will be dealt with appropriately. So anyone who thinks it's a good thing to do, not only is it wrong, but it's not particularly smart, because the Victoria police are out there and they're doing their job well, says the Victoria Premier. Well, yeah, maybe they are. It's a police state. It's absolutely scary. Well, I heard about this on the TV tonight, and it was actually quite a long, given quite a bit of space. Police have made an arrest in the little town of Schaumburg, which is north of Toronto, because somebody had taken six Indigenous Lives Matter signs that some of the virtue signaling folks in that town have put up, along with Black Lives Matter signs. Anyway, somebody who announced this on Facebook said that he had this person is accused of removing six of these signs the other day and burning them. The hate squad for York Region got involved, and the emergency response unit, they're the ones that are all suited up, you know, like, you know, Rambo. Well, actually, some sort of almost like a military strike force. Finally swooped down and arrested the fellow. York Regional Police have arrested the man in connection with a hate crime investigation in a small Ontario community's efforts to confront racism were reduced to ash. Residents of Schaumburg, a village of about 2,700 people, about 40 miles north of Toronto, have been displaying about 200 signs reading Black Lives Matter and Indigenous Lives Matter on their lawns and business fronts since the beginning of July. But late last week, someone sent a message to a community Facebook group expressing outrage over the campaign and threatening to destroy some of the signs. Then in the early mornings, morning hours of August the 11th, six of the Indigenous signs, Lives Matter sign, placards, were missing from the village's historic Main Street and were set alight in a nearby park. It's not actually clear if these were on private property. If they were on private property, then yeah, technically it's a minor offense. You know, you shouldn't take other people's property or burden. But if it was on public property, and that's not exactly clear from this report. On Thursday, York Regional Police staged a dramatic noon hour raid, closing off a village's business strip as members of the force's emergency response team arrested a male suspect as he stood outside his Main Street apartment smoking. They then carried out a search warrant on his second floor unit looking for evidence of an accelerant, according to police officers on the scene. They haven't yet revealed the name of the person. You talk about using a nuclear bomb to remove a mosquito. I mean, this is insane stuff. I'm feeling quite relieved, said Susan Heslop, who administers the Schaumburg Community Facebook group and passed on a screenshot of the threat onto police on the morning it was made. Anyway, what's the threat exactly? CBC, that's Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, has reviewed an image of the threatening message which Heslop refused to approve for posting on the forum. Little miscensor there. It uses racially charged language and made reference to recent land protests by Six Nations, these are Indians in Caledonia. They illegally occupied land that wasn't theirs. The threat targeted only the Indigenous Lives Matter signs and warned that they would be burned. Well, okay, that's the threat. I mean, we are really, really scraping the bottom of the barrel for charges here. This is what the person who posted this said. If they think that their lives matter so much, these are the Indians, then they wouldn't be breaking laws and stopping us, as in all races, from using our roads. The suspect has been released. Anyway, you talk about, I posted this on Facebook. Anyway, Greg Walker, a local resident, one of the virtue signalers, said, "It's a hateful statement. We're offended. We're offended that we would have somebody who would think that of our native indigenous people." Yeah, not the Indians in general, but these ones that are occupying territory that is not theirs down in Caledonia and behaving in a violent manner toward the police. That's what this guy is referring to. And you see, it's really ideas, it's political opinions that are being criminalized. There's much virtue signaling and so on going on here, but what is really frightening, I mean, folks of course have the right to virtue signal if they want and put up, you know, any Lives Matter posters that they wish, but when somebody removes six of apparently over 200 and burns them, to call in the police, to call in the hate squad, to call in the emergency response unit, this certainly seems like complete overkill. But we live in insane times. Oh, I was reading over the annual report to shareholders of a very big Canadian corporation called Empire. And they own a number of chains of grocery stores, but particularly Sobeys. And on one page of this report, they have some little graphics about the past year. "We are on a journey to make a big impact," they say. "People." Okay. They're dedicated to create a more diverse and inclusive workforce that enables us to help build healthy communities. Diverse and inclusive. Now, these are great terms, but you know, you wonder what they mean. The planet. Oh, okay, what are they doing for the planet? Reduce our environmental impact, enhance our resilience to climate change, and do our part to protect our planet for future generations. Waste reduction. 225 million plastic checkout bags were removed from circulation from our Sobeys banner stores. Yeah, that's right. Forcing the customers to either haul along their own burlap bags or accept paper bags. It's more likely to break and spill the contents all over the parking lot. Notice the pompous non sequiturs. Reduce our environmental impact, enhance our resilience to climate change. How are they going to do that by removing plastic bags? They're not. Plastic bags don't cause climate change. I suppose to the extent that they're made out of petroleum products, then you'd have to accept the junk science argument that somehow the release of hydrocarbons into the atmosphere is causing climate change. It isn't. In fact, it's not. It used to be argued that they caused global warming. Well, that didn't hold up. So now they cause climate change. But how is it that they cause global warming? Okay, there wasn't global warming. Okay, well, they cause climate change. Well, what is climate change? It wouldn't seem that that getting colder and getting warmer can be caused by the same thing. So what they did, very neatly, while they furiously virtue signal, is to take away choice from the customer. Oh yeah, this is the big laugh. Along came COVID virus. And then suddenly, these plastic bags were okay again. You know, it's like being involved in a crazy, primitive communist state where the dictator constantly changes the party line. And George Orwell captured this so beautifully in 1984, where the state that the protagonist was in was constantly warring with one of two other big states, like Eurasia, and I forget what the other one was, but and alliances would change from time to time, but history was always being rewritten, and it always was, we have always been at war with whatever the current enemy was. And I see this same sort of fanaticism in the whole climate change argument.
It was an interesting little story in today's National Post. Criminology school severs ties to law enforcement, issuing a harsh indictment of policing in Canada. Carleton University's criminology department says it is severing its student placement programs with law enforcement agencies to address systemic racism and colonialism. Wait a sec. We haven't been a colony since 1867. You wonder about some of the nuttiness at Canadian universities. Police and prison institutions are hostile to outside critiques, show imperviousness to reform, and do not have the leadership capacity to engage in the transformative change, says a statement from the Ottawa School's Institute of Criminology and Criminal Justice. So they claim that police departments are hostile to outside critiques. I might say, so are university Marxists. and do not have the leadership to engage in transformative change. What'd that mean? Quote, even in the context of widespread public scrutiny and claims to be reforming, Canadian police are on pace to kill a record number of people in 2020, many of whom are racialized, indigenous, and or suffering from mental health challenges. A university that is academics who are supposed to be in the business of dealing with facts are prepared in early August to make predictions for a year that is still 4.5 plus months to go. So the claim that police are going to kill a record number of people, many of whom are racialized, that means non-white. they can't even use the accurate term. Well, there indeed have been some blacks and East Indians killed by police. And in most of these cases, it was a matter of violence on the part of the person killed. They're going to kill indigenous people, and people suffering from mental health challenges. Well, this of course is a problem. How do you deal with people who are demented? They may be off their medications. They're violent. They're unresponsive to reason. Difficult to talk them down. Well, I suppose one possibility would be to send in social workers. Have a chat with them. But if they turn violent, then what? Or turn more violent? It's not an easy problem. Anyway,
sort of in the good news column, is the fact that a number of other university criminology departments do not go along with this. One said, and I thought this that this was rather telling, that it's really not suitable if you're studying something to make judgments in advance about it. If this is a criminology department, to make judgments about police forces, that's not studying it. That's already concluding. Rémy Boivin, director of the International Center for Comparative Criminology at the Université de Montréal, said Carleton's decision is bad for research and bad for students. Quote, I would expect that kind of move by a political organization, but from something that claims to train students in research, it's not exactly a good message to send. In research, the ideal position is that you're neutral and you're trying to understand a given issue. Yeah. To say they want nothing to do with police because they're racist and blah blah blah. I thought that was rather interesting. Mucho unhappiness in some parts of the United States because a QAnon supporter, Marjorie Taylor Greene, won the Republican nomination for a North Georgia congressional seat, and she believes in the QAnon, shall I say, theory or phenomenon. And I must say, I don't have a firm position. I know a little bit about QAnon. Is it right? I honestly don't know. And I don't think there's any shame in saying I don't know, because I don't. Here's the story in part from much huffing and puffing. Congressional Republicans came a step closer Tuesday to welcoming into their ranks a promoter of the QAnon, they call it conspiracy theory, whose adherents believe U.S. President Donald Trump is battling a cabal of deep state saboteurs who worship Satan and traffic children for sex. And this is where I just say I don't know. I have not seen convincing proof that Washington deep state insiders worship Satan. I've heard allegations of extensive child molesting. Again, I don't know. I can't say I've seen conclusive proof. However, is there a deep cultural Marxist leftist state within the Washington bureaucracy, some universities, the political process, certain financiers, maybe even in the military? Yeah, I think there is. There is a deep state. Of course, this is dismissed as a conspiracy theory. Marjorie Taylor Greene, who has endorsed baseless conspiracy theory, but let's just say the theory, and has made a slew of other racist remarks. Well, what do you mean other? Didn't quote anyone's to begin with. The Republican primary runoff in Georgia's 14th congressional district. Her victory in a northwestern swath of the state that has favored Republicans by wide margins has set her up to become QAnon's first devotee in Congress. And there's quotations from a number of establishment Republicans who tried to work against her and dislike what she said and so on. Twitter recently took action against the QAnon theory,
including by eliminating more than 7,000 accounts. Facebook is also weighing new action. A representative said, you talk about censorship. And I think we reported on this a week or two ago about Twitter having simply arbitrarily removing 7,000 accounts. Goes on to say, in videos, she said, black people are held slaves of the Democratic Party, and called the election of the first two Muslim women to Congress evidence of an Islamic invasion of our government. Well, I think she's referring there to Ilhan Omar, among others. I don't think that's a overstatement. And if the accusation is that the previous statement is racist, black people are being slaves to the Democratic Party. In all the cheering for the nomination of Kamala Harris as Joe Biden's running mate, various Negro spokesmen on CNN emphasized very strongly that blacks, particularly black women, are the backbone of the Democratic Party, and proclaimed they were predicted that Biden and Harris would win 95% of the black vote. I don't think it will be that high, but nonetheless, when this lady who's already being famed, Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's incidentally a construction executive. And what did she say exactly? She said black people are being held slaves to the Democratic Party. I don't think that's unfair. The Democratic Party has taken the black vote for granted, and one of the reasons for the nomination of Kamala Harris is the belief that they have not the vote will be theirs for the taking. They actually have to get the blacks out to vote. And they may be more motivated to vote for a fellow black than they were in 2016 for the Democratic Party nominee being Hillary Clinton. Even though the Clintons, particularly her husband, had been a big supporter of black causes. In fact, Bill Clinton even considered himself an honorary black. His love of jazz music and his sexual habits, this is what he said himself. He may have been the first black president. Well, not racially black, that'd be for sure. Anyway, I think it's going to be interesting to see what comes of this. Now, you probably heard reported again and again and again that Kamala Harris was the first black nominee for vice president. And it's been so bad. Obama was president for 8 years. It's not as though blacks have never had an opportunity to have the top job. But as with so much with the fake news media, even that assertion isn't quite true, that she was the first black nominee. Here's a story about Charlotta Bass. In 1952, she ran for the Progressive Party. Harris is not the first black to run for VP. More than half a century before Senator Kamala Harris was named Joe Biden's running mate Tuesday, another black woman from California took stage at the Chicago Convention and made a momentous declaration. this as a historic moment in American political life. The journalist and political activist Charlotta Bass told the crowd, "Historic for myself, for my people, for all women. For the first time in the history of this nation, a political party has chosen a Negro woman for the second highest office in the land." And those are her direct words. In the days when they referred to themselves as Negroes. The date, 1952. Indeed, while Harris will indeed be remembered as the first black woman and the first Asian American to appear on a major party ticket, she is not the first black woman to run for vice president. That title belonged to Bass, who joined a long shot Progressive Party ticket in 1952, more than a decade before the voting rights law passed Congress. Bass's chapter starts in 1910, when she moved from her native South Carolina to Los Angeles and started working at the California Eagle, an influential black weekly newspaper. She and her husband became joint publishers, though she took over fully following his death in 1934. Just as a matter of accuracy, it's typical of the lamestream media. They can't even get basic historical facts correct. And she was, in terms of blacks running for the top office, way back in, I believe, the 80s, communist Angela Davis was the Communist Party of USA's presidential candidate. Now, granted, the Communist Party was a small party compared to some of these other ones. But it's a matter of accuracy. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to take my musical break right now, and why don't we play some women in country music. Women have made a huge contribution to country and western music, and here are some of the, what you might call the queens of country and western. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
When you found somebody new, I thought I never would forget you, for I thought then I never could. But time has taken all the pains away. beg your pardon.
Thank you. No one would know the mess I
made in my life. I wish I was a teddy bear, not living or loving, not going nowhere. I wish I was a teddy bear, and I'm wishing that I hadn't fallen in love with you. And I'm wishing that I hadn't fallen in love with you.
This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, and I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle shamrock rose and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. And Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka's Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. Our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf.